meeting is being recorded.
All right. Do we have those members of the public who wish to speak online?
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, then we can formally commence this meeting of the Inner West Local Panning Panel. Because this is a meeting on behalf of the council, I should, on behalf of the council, acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. Next is declarations of interest, and there are none. So we can move straight on to the agenda. Item one is a standing item, a report on matters pending, and that has already been dealt with by the panel. So we will next deal with item number four, which is brought forward at the request of the applicant. And we have three speakers registered to address us. Before that, however, it is usual for the panel to introduce ourselves, and we will proceed to do that now. For my part, I'm a lawyer, I'm a QC, I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court, I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and currently an adjunct professor of law at Western Sydney University. Mr. Johnson.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name's David Johnson. I'm an environmental scientist and planner. I have a background in environmental science. I've been spent most of my career in the consulting area. I've also spent several years as a member of the Planning Assessment Commission, now the Independent Planning Commission. I am a former acting commissioner in the Land and Environment Court, and I sit on three other local planning panels in the Sydney area. Thank you.
Ms. Day.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody. I'm a consulting town planner. I have qualifications in geography, natural resource management, and town and country planning. I have a mix of local government contracting arrangements, private clients. I'm on this and two other planning panels in Sydney, and I'm a member of the Planning Institute of Australia.
And Ms. Richards.
Hello, everyone. I'm a community representative on the panel. I've resided in the Inner West since 1985 and in Leichhardt since 2001, so 20 years. I've got long-term connections with the Inner West, involvement with the former Rocks Players, with community theatre, with the Inner West Chamber Choir. My qualifications are originally in modern languages, including Italian, subsequently in occupational health and safety, in horticulture, and most recently in urban ecology, a Bachelor of Science at University of Technology. I'm of Gamilaroi descent, and I am living with a number of physical disabilities, and I'm also hearing impaired. I'm looking forward to contributing my knowledge and to sharing in the knowledge of my esteemed colleagues and to improving outcomes in planning for the Inner West.
Thank you for that. So, as I said, we should proceed first with item number four, which is the modification of an approved development of a heritage house at 13 Jane Street, Balmain. Do we have Mr. Davies? Mr. Davies?
Yes, hello. Stephen Davies. I'm a heritage consultant as a director of Urbis. I'm also former chair of the Heritage Council of New South Wales, and I also sit on two local planning panels. Today I'm here, though, to talk to this particular application, which relates to 13 Jane Street, and what we're requesting is the deletion of both Condition 1A and Condition 1AB. These relate to openings between two rooms and the principal form of the dwelling, and also to the removal of a wall and an outbuilding at the rear of the site. I just want to say that the terrace house, although it's a listed heritage item and it's was constructed of sandstone and adjoins a similar dwelling. Was built in the 1880s. This is a very prolific period for terrace housing in Sydney, and there are a number of terrace houses, obviously thousands of them, through from Paddington, Surrey Hills, into the inner west and to the south. So the actual typology of the terrace house is not rare. And in this case, in relation to the opening of the two front rooms, or the rooms to the left of the hall, as condition 1A requires to be deleted, this is quite a typical approach to providing better accommodation, especially in a house like this, which is sandstone. We don't want to change the rear elevation or the front elevation, and to provide more light and amenity to these two rooms, we're proposing to open them and to provide nibs and a bulkhead in the way that heritage conservation requires, that the two rooms be identified as individual rooms. They will still be red. The cornices in the front room will be retained, and the cornices and details that have been removed in the second room will also be restored. There is no policy of council that says you can't do this. It just seems to be a preference. As with the outbuilding at condition 1B, it is a small brick building. We are asking for one of those walls to be removed so that the detached living area at the rear of the house can be better accommodated. I think that the idea of the detached living area is good conservation philosophy. It detaches from the main building. It doesn't impact on the rear elevation of the sandstone terrace house. And I believe that a small brick wall, which could easily be rebuilt or reconstructed in the future as the internal brick wall we're talking about, both of these are, I think, able to be interpreted well and also provide a reversible solution in heritage conservation terms. So these are our two issues.
All right, any questions by the panel?
None from me, thanks.
No questions, Mrs. Day. Mr. Johnson, any questions? Where's Mr. Johnson?
No, I'm here, no questions from me.
No questions. Ms. Richards, any questions?
No questions, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Davies.
Thank you very much.
All right. Is Mr. David Mitchell online? Do we have Mr. Mitchell?
Yes. Hello. Can you see me?
Yes. You have the
floor. Hi there. All right. Thank you very much. I'm just going to talk to the carport. We have, in this application, we've proposed a carport, which council are generally supportive of. There is a minor overshadowing, as noted, at 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. by the proposed structure. Now, we feel that this is clearly a minor overshadowing and one that's acceptable. Notwithstanding that, our clients are quite comfortable to come to a sort of mediated position with council. In the conditions of consent, council have asked for some design modifications and that this could be revised to a lightweight roof set with an RL, which matches the current RL of the what we have currently proposed, which is a concrete planted roof. We've had a look at that, and we're comfortable to make an amendment to make it a lightweight roof. However, to achieve head heights, we can drop the overall ridge height by 250 mils. However, that would then involve a ridge on the northern portion of the carport falling away to the southern part of the carport, meaning that from the north at that ridge line, it falls away about 350 mils. So there would be additional reduction in shadowing, which is what we say is minor to the west. You can see that the shape is irregular for the carport. This comes about as a result of the difficulty in accessing the site. We've been granted an easement by the neighbour to the north to access our site, and you'll see in the documentation that we have our sweat path analysis, which denotes how many turns to get out. And so in that regard, the opening to the garage needs to stay that wide to allow a garage roller door. So we don't really have the ability to reduce the shape, but as discussed, we're comfortable to revise to a lightweight roof and drop that ridge by 250 mils. If there's also just one of the notes in the proposal by council have said that we're proposing to delete the skylight to the house at level one, where that's not being proposed. We're retaining that existing skylight, so there's no changes required there. I think Stephen's spoken eloquently about our heritage and the idea of the retention around the outbuilding for the kitchen. If I could just only really quickly talk to that. The retention of the nibs and then the opening of the small opening to become that larger window enables a really sort of generous space around that heritage portion, which allows it to be read really distinctly from the contemporary addition at the back. So,
excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Okay,
no, that's all right. You continue, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay, thank you. Just to say that that extra space that allows you to move around that heritage building gives something to the feeling of that heritage building and the contrast with the new portion. Thank you, Chair.
All right. So looking at condition 1A, and in particular 1A little C, if you can follow.
Yes.
What changes do you seek in relation to 1A C?
Yes. So
it's on page 204 of the agenda, if that helps you.
That's great, please. Yeah. So if we could change that, so strike out C1, retain C2, and then point three is the overall height reduced by 250 mils at the ridge, such that the RL is 37.35 at its highest.
37.35, did you say?
That's correct. That's right, yes.
And you're happy with four?
Yes, yeah, so four would be that the roof must be amended to a skill-in roof form, and then we would say sloping from north to south, so delete from east to west.
Yes, delete it from east to west. All right, any questions by the panel?
Just in relation to C, Roman numeral 3, why is the reference to the ridge rather than the overall height, given the ridge is the highest point of the roof anyway?
The current proposal is a flat concrete roof with a planter, and so by revising it to a skillion roof, We're then saying that the highest point is at the north, which is that new RL, and so that is the point at which it causes, you know, has the largest impact on, you know, overshadowing. So that's, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, the ridge, the RL changes from 37.1 to 37.35.
That's right, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions by the panel?
No.
Mr. Johnson, Ms. Richard, no. Any questions? Yep. No?
No.
All right. Thank you for that. Next, Ms. McCarthy.
Thank you, panel. Can you confirm you can hear me okay?
Yes, yes, we can. And I should remind you, we do have your one-page written statement.
That's great. And so I won't go into too much detail. I was keen to, I guess, speak from the perspective of the owner and resident of the property, particularly to the substantial amenity that the proposed opening of the southern wall of the outhouse of the kitchen will provide, and the proposed opening to the existing internal wall. So as I noted in my written statement, you know, we believe the outhouse is a subsidiary building. I note that it can't be seen from the street or from any adjoining property. It's not specifically referenced at all in the listing of the property or accompanying description. And in fact, in its current form, because it has been substantially amended and converted into a granny flat with its own entrance, additional living area, bathroom and kitchen, it doesn't actually read as part of the original property at all. And we weren't aware that was what it was, in fact, when we purchased this property in the first place. As you would be aware, our original DA plans, which have been approved, retained all walls of the outhouse building and inserted the kitchen within that space. But when it came to actually, you know, doing the detailed design work for that kitchen, we really found that for a substantial family, which we are a family of five, it just wasn't possible to fit a kitchen of sufficient scale within the confines of that space, where the benefits of the opening are enormous, allowing us to have a substantial food preparation area with the island, but also allowing that increased engagement between the kitchen and the living space, which is such an important part of how modern families live, and obviously very different to how kitchens were used in Victorian times, when they were kind of dirty, smelly areas out the back of the property. But we believe that, you know, the opening that we have proposed is not in any way excessive. The building will continue to maintain its original footprint with the retention of nib walls and the other three walls of the building, including significantly the chimney. It will actually be easily read as what would have been the original outhouse. And that continues also because of the roof design. So the roof for the outhouse is separate from the roof to the adjoining pavilion, enabling both those spaces to be read as separate buildings. So as Urbis has submitted, you know, we really think there's no reduction at all to the heritage significance of the building. And we note that the original report from the council's heritage officer indicated that the opening to the southern wall was acceptable and would have minimal impact.
And I don't really
understand why that position has changed. And no new material was provided to council in respect of that opening, because we believed that the position was that was supported. So just moving on to the opening between the proposed living and dining room, I wanted to additionally note, as Urbis has noted, this is quite common, and retaining nibs is very established common practice, such that the floor space would continue to be read as originally having been two separate rooms. And to note that the exact same opening has already been made, the adjoining terrace number 11, of which this is a matching pair. So for us, and the way that modern families live, clearly having that single open space with three small children allows parental involvement in their lives, and being able to supervise activities going on in one room from the other room, which is such an important part of how modern families live today. So, for these reasons, we believe that the alterations that we have proposed are minimal and appropriate, and that the full heritage significance of the property is being maintained.
Any questions by the panel?
None from me, thanks.
No.
None from me either, David. No.
No.
Ms. Richards, any questions?
No questions, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much for that. What will happen is the panel will take on board what's been put to us, and we will publish our decision in due course. And I thank you all for your input. So with that, we can turn to the agenda. The next item is item number two, the proposed development at 552 Parramatta Road, Petersham. But we don't have anyone registered to speak on that item. In that case, we will refer it for consideration after the public meeting. So we can move straight on to item number three. This is the proposed development at 176 Evans Street, Roselle. And we have a number of people who wish to speak on that application. Firstly, is Glenn Apps available? Glenn Apps?
I am, Mr. Chair. You can hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Do you agree with the recommendation?
We do. We do indeed. And I can be mercifully brief as a result of that. The recommendations for conditional approval, and of course we support that recommendation and thank Council for its well-considered assessment of the proposal. The application seeks to vary two development standards, namely the minimum landscaped area and the maximum site coverage, and those standards to some degree interrelated. Each variation has been justified by a Clause 4.6 request, which Council recommends be supported, and of course the panel will make up its own mind as to whether those 4.6 variations are well-founded. Likewise, there's a couple of DCP variations. Council has considered those variations and found that those are properly justified and can be supported. The key drivers for the form of development is to firstly make use of the space above the existing garage structure, and more importantly, to avoid achieving the desired floor space through a second story, which we say would be a poor outcome for the existing single-story cottage within a heritage conservation area. The proposal respects the context of its setting and respects the heritage values of the HCA and the dwelling itself. The proposal makes good use of space and provides high level of amenity without any adverse impacts on adjoining land. With me today, Mr. Chair, I have the applicant and owner, Mr. Danny Talbot, have the project architect, Bridie Goff, and our heritage expert, Jennifer Hill. Those people are also available to respond, as am I, respond to any questions that the panel may have. Otherwise, we commend the recommendation to you.
All right. Any questions by the panel? Mr. Johnson?
Not from me, David.
No questions? Ms. Day, any questions?
Just in relation to the selected tree species, which I think is a frangipani. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wondering why that particular species was chosen in the site.
Bridie, can you come on and speak to that?
Ms. Goff?
Yes, yeah, I'm here. Look, I think literally we were looking for something that was quite sculptural in that space, and also something that was deciduous, so that because it is quite a small, relatively south-facing landscaped area. So something that would provide some shade and colour during spring, but would allow as much natural light to that small courtyard space as possible in winter. But it's not something we're necessarily attached to. So if there is a preferred species, that's absolutely fine.
Okay, a bit of flexibility on that. And I guess the other thing too is that a frangipani's canopy will spread at least 3 metres as it matures, and the location of the frangipani is pretty much within a metre of the boundary. So I note that condition 30 on page 123 talks about the minimum mature canopy 3 metres, but it becomes a practical problem if it's only a metre from the boundary. So just wondering if there's any, you know, play in the position of that tree to be perhaps a little more central, which may be more practical as it matures.
Sorry, Glenn.
Happy to hear from you. unless there's scope, of course, to change the species of tree to something that has a lesser spread, that's probably more suited for that location.
Yes, yeah. Oh, look, I'm all for trees, but I'm not sure about its suitability. So I imagine that Council has a native tree species list, and perhaps we could pull something from the Callistemon family or similar.
Yeah, that would be fine. I'm happy to review that list.
And bees. Okay.
Yeah.
You're happy to see the list or choose from it?
I'm happy to choose from the list, yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Right. Any other questions by the panel?
Chairperson, I had just another question about the landscaping. Second to Lindsay's questioning about the frangipani, just looking at the schematic for the landscaping around the pool, I was just curious about the surface cover. I can see you're identifying buffalo turf underneath the containerized bamboo screen. On the area around the pool, I can see reclaimed sleepers are being used, and there's proposed ST2. You've got proposed soft scape infill between the sleeper steps. Where it says deep soil and where the planting would take place, what surface medium are you considering? Is that also buffalo turf or turf, or are you looking at pebbles?
No, it would be turf as well.
That would be turf there. And yes. Not the turf that's in the picture F1, where it looks as if it looks to be something like mondo grass, a high non-steppable grass, a decorative grass underneath the frangipani.
No, it would actually, the intention is to have an area of actual grass turf landscape outside there as well.
So lawn, in other words?
Yes, yes.
And could I just clarify again, sorry, with that diagram, there is only, and we're also looking at perhaps re-examining which particular tree species, given the constraints on sunlight and positioning. In your diagram, underneath RL30.12, there is another image that looks as if it could be a second frangipani. I'm unsure if that's meant to be a second large tree or a shrub, or if it's a P3, which you're indicating to be agaves. And I'm just concerned about there are requirements also to ensure that there aren't climbable trees in proximity to the pool.
It is they're P3s, those ones just under that RL30.12.
What are they?
They're more agaves.
Oh, they are agaves. Okay, yep. Thank you for that.
I guess just leading on from that, there's a couple of locations, I think, on the western side of the property in the vicinity of the trees. It talks about turf between the pavers. I guess I'm looking at the shadows and so on and the position of the property running down away from the street. There's not going to be a lot of sun in that part of the site in midwinter, and I just wonder about the longevity of turf and whether you'd be opposed to perhaps using another species along that fence line that may be a little bit more shade tolerant.
Oh, look, I think absolutely. I think we'd be certainly deferring to advice from a landscape architect, I guess. You know, I'm not a plant specialist myself, so I would have to defer to someone else for that sort of advice. But Danny, correct me if I'm wrong, the intention is just to not have all hard surface out in that courtyard. So the intention was to have sort of those pavers spaced out with some sort of permeable medium in between them, flowing into that sort of grassed area. So finalization of those plant species as such is something, I would have to just get advice from a landscape architect on.
Yeah, but there's a little bit of flexibility in the treatment of that area.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, panel? Mr. Johnson?
No, I have no questions.
All right. No other questions. Mr. Talbot, do you want to add anything?
No, I think everything's been covered. And we can get a landscape architect in. I'm pretty happy with everything.
Well, subject to those minor considerations, although they're not all that minor, you can assume that the recommendation will be adopted for the consent. And there may be just a bit of tweaking for these landscaping conditions.
Excuse me, this is Jennifer Hill. I'm the heritage architect. Would I be able to
say something? Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
No, not a problem. Okay, two things. There's a condition that relates to the treatment of the doors and windows in the southeast and southwest elevations of the rear addition.
Which condition?
It's actually on page 101. It recommends that a condition is applied.
And where is the condition?
The consent. I'm just looking for the condition. I should have looked that one up. Sorry. Bridie, you might be able to confirm what condition that is. Anyway, the point that we're making is that there is no need to actually condition those doors being of timber because they are, in fact, of timber, framed, and they slide away, and that therefore it's not required to do that. But looking through the conditions, I don't see a condition, so maybe that's been dealt with. So that's one issue. And the second
issue... Jennifer, there is a condition that relates to changes to be made to the documentation prior to the issue of the construction certificate. So I'm just scrolling through to get you that actual number. But
there's
an
external, there's a condition on page 115 that number that's six it. That relates to external finishes.
Right. Yeah, correct. That's it.
So it's been brought forward into the conditions.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that that condition's not required because, in fact, the doors and windows are already a traditional timber design and timber frame. And then the second point that
can
we'd
I,
like
can
to
Can I just
address,
interrupt there for yes. a moment? Are you referring to condition 6A, doors and windows in the southeast? If they're already timber, then there's probably no need to delete that condition. And I guess what it does is ensures that they, during the renovation, stay timber.
That's right. Yeah.
It also asks them to be timber
thatch. There's no need to delete it. It's retention of the existing and an assurance that they'll remain timber.
Okay. Well, if I suppose our only concern was it looked as if it was a condition that was requiring changes to the drawings, which already included timber frame, so that our only concern was maybe that condition therefore needs to note have something in it as noted on the DA, because it seems to suggest that the what's drawn on the drawings is not complying with that condition, which is the reason why that condition's been inserted. But I'll leave that. We're just flagging this as a concern that we've got. And
which plan are you referring to that has all the details of the doors and windows, just so we can have a look?
Okay. If you go to page 138, you've got a plan that's actually showing where the doors are, and page 141 is showing you the elevation of the doors. They're noted as W1 and W2.
Yeah, I mean they're not completely detailed. So I guess that condition on page 115 is just making sure that that is what they are. I mean there's no flag in to say timber or anything else there.
No, that's fine. We just were concerned that we were being asked to change it. And the second one is condition 6C, also on page 4. Where it talks about the colour bond basalt steel cladding to the connection between the main building form and the rear pavilion is to be replaced with colour bond dune or similar. What that's effectively doing is the opposite of what was intended. What was intended was that the links would read in a distinctive way by being finished in a colour which is monument or a darker colour in contrast to the light pavilions. That condition requires that the pavilions are actually the same colour as the pavilions. And our concern is that what that would do is make, if one goes to page 141 of the panel papers, it would actually make the links and the buildings all read as one form. I know they're distinguished by their higher roofs, but it's our opinion that they would be better if they're in a darker contrast So we're not fixed on that colour being monument, but what we are suggesting is that they be replaced with, rather than colour bond dune, it's not obvious to you, but that is the colour of the rest of the pavilions, be replaced with an alternate colour as contrast. That was really the intention of it. We're not fixated on it being monument, but we think it is actually important that the links are reading as a darker element to the pavilions, because it affects your perception of the bulk of the edition. That's all. They're my only comments.
Do you think it reduces the bulk having a darker colour?
Yes, position? I do actually. What it does is as soon as you actually introduce the dark colour, the link becomes reads as four elements, a link, the first pavilion, another link, and the last pavilion that turns through 90 degrees. As a result of doing that, the fact that they read as four pavilions will actually help the perception of their bulk. If you actually make them all the same colour, what will actually happen is that the eye will actually link the links and the pavilions all together, and instead of reading each element for the length that it is, you'll actually read it as something that's twice as long and will therefore, from a perception point of view, appear more bulky, even though it's a light colour.
I'm wondering where in the report it might be discussed, because it must have been some internal referral that has prompted it. I think it might be on page 101. Mm. Yeah, 101. It's talking about... Yeah, 101, 102.
Yeah.
Well, they say colour to be replaced with colour bond dune or similar. And does that give you enough scope?
Well, it doesn't really, because that's actually suggesting a colour that's very similar to the colour of the pavilions, which is exactly the opposite of what was actually being proposed. It doesn't have to be monument. I know generally council doesn't prefer that colour, but I think it's important that the links are reading as an alternate darker colour to distinguish them.
I think that condition was probably originally raised specifically about the monument colour, because the darker colours aren't preferred for solar absorbency and things like that. But certainly I can understand completely where you're coming from, Jennifer, in terms of the having the contrast, and you're right about the eye reading it as one giant, as one big building. And I think that, you know, the panel's in agreement that certainly a different colour could be supported, just something not in that dark hue, something could be lighter.
So maybe we could have a condition that says a darker colour to the satisfaction of the Heritage Architecture Council, and then we can come back and show you the colours that achieve that outcome. Possibly, yeah.
So looking at proposed condition 6C, you want to omit the words colour bond dune or similar and substitute those words with an alternate colour to the satisfaction of the council's heritage advisor. Yep.
Yes, a darker alternative colour. Yes, thank you.
A darker alternate colour.
Yep.
To the satisfaction of council's heritage advisor. And that is the change you would seek to that condition.
That is. Thank you very much.
Yes. Anything else?
No, that's everything I've got to say. Thanks.
Any further questions by the panel?
No, I'm happy.
No further questions, Chair.
All right. Thank you for that. We will consider what's been put to us and probably make those changes that have been suggested. We'll publish our decision in due course. So with that, we can now move on to the next item. We dealt with item number four. Item number five is 96 Elizabeth Street, Ashfield. These are alterations and additions to an existing building to use the ground floor as a medical centre, and the first floor was a residence. And we have Mr. Nick Varkas online, I think. Mr. Varkas?
Hi, thank you, panel. Thank you, Chair, for hearing me answer.
Do you agree with the recommendation?
We thank the council for being supportive of our proposal. The only thing I wanted to bring up with you was Chapter B, Part 10, Public Art. So, Heritage. Sorry?
Page 292.
Yeah.
As well.
Yes.
So originally, Heritage Consultant and councils couldn't find any reason for the public art to be retained. We couldn't find any heritage significance for the public art, except that it was put there because the building wasn't as well maintained as it is now with us as the new owners of the property. So we did propose a new artwork to be placed, which wasn't satisfactory to council or the heritage consultant, which we didn't fight. But what we are asking the panel to consider is just to remove the wording to retain the existing public art, and that we just don't have any art at the moment.
So what you're seeking, looking at the conditions, the proposed conditions, on page 297, you'll see condition 2G, wall art. You're seeking the deletion of that condition.
Well, yeah, we're seeking the deletion of the retain. So we're happy for them to reject our proposal, but we're just hoping that we don't have to retain anything until a suitable artwork is found.
But you have proposed signage on that wall in your plans. Is that what you propose to do?
Well, it was going to be art. It wasn't supposed to be signage. The signage is only sitting on the fascia of the building where it was always, where it was originally, because it was a corner shop. It was always a commercial space. So we're only talking about public art, which is just a small art that's on the Old Street southeastern wall.
All right, I understand what you want. All right, any questions by the panel?
Just the entire site is a heritage item, including those external walls, and I'm of the opinion that existing street art really adds to that elevation. I'm actually quite keen for the existing public art to be retained on that facade.
So I feel
that you have good advertising with the awning that is going around both things, and I just think further advertising is really not necessary. One of the other points I noticed yesterday on site is that the visual, you know, if you were using that facade to advertise your business, it's a very quiet street where this elevation or facade is really coming from the south heading north past the building, or coming from the east heading west. You actually can't see that elevation until you're almost in that quieter street. So I'm inclined to retain what I feel contributes to the existing heritage item on the site.
Right. Yeah, so we're not proposing signage there.
Yeah, but I just think it should be left as it is. I think it contributes to the heritage significance of the building and is also beneficial to the neighbourhood. But over to the other panel members for their thoughts.
Mr. Johnson?
I tend to agree with Lindsay Day on that. And I'm just looking at my photograph, which I took of that public art when I inspected the premises the other day. If we were to remove that clause,
what we wanted to do was paint a picture of the streetscape of the building as it was in 1888, but nobody could support us. So what we did was we put the building name and street address, not to be signage, not to be advertising to our business, just to be a deterrent for graffiti or to make the wall not look so bare. The art at the moment that's there is quite, there used to be, there used to be a air conditioner on the awning before the awning was hit by a truck. So the art's quite damaged and peeling, and it's Strawberry Jam and a building company that had nothing to do sort of with the building. So we did have other ideas. We do agree that something should be there. We're just concerned that because nobody could give us a reason why it had heritage significance to the building, we just didn't understand why it should have been retained.
Okay, yeah, I can understand your comments. I guess our concern probably is that if that public art is removed, it gives you almost open slather to put any other public art there, doesn't it?
No, because then we would put a separate DA to council, most likely with the Ashfield Heritage Society as opposed to a heritage consultant, because they've been quite supportive about what we've been doing. And we haven't tried to modernise the building. We've actually tried to just restore the building.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
So we actually had a neighbour come in and drop off a calendar of the building with two grocers standing up the front, some ladies in their Victorian wear, all posing for a photograph. So we did have ideas about what the area looked like at the time. That would be our proposals, but it's quite expensive to make something like that and put that proposal forward and get an artist to draw it and protect it, which, you know, our family doesn't have the funds at the moment to do such a sizable project. And we figured, seeing as this was already brought up in this existing DA, then we thought we'd ask your consideration.
So you wouldn't be prepared to just leave the existing public art subject to a future DA when you do decide what you would like to replace it with at a later stage?
It's just nobody could give us, like the people in the street that have lived there told us that it was probably placed at around 1994 to 1996. We just couldn't understand where the sticking point was, but we'll take your advice. That's fine.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Ms. Richards, any questions?
No, just an observation. I certainly understand the applicant's arguments and the idea of an alternative mural. I'm looking at my own photos, David, that I took. I can understand that the applicant would like something that's more relevant to the to the proposed use of the building, or an artistic and historic mural or photograph. But I think there are two things. If we remove these paintings, I'm reading the sign that's there. What is the history of the funding from Ashfield Municipal Council that actually provided the money for the creation of these murals? There's a history there that we will lose. The signage says Ashfield Municipal Council's Department of Community Services has funded this mural featuring advertisements from the early 1900s. I would like to understand what the significance would be of losing that initiative if we change the murals.
Could we potentially still acknowledge council's support for the new mural?
As an alternative, and you'd be looking at further development applications, but seeking something equivalent, an equivalent community mural that is still representative of the heritage of the building, but one that you feel replaces the...
Well, something that belongs to the building is sort of what we were hoping for, as opposed to for our business, for our personal views, for our... Like, it was something that belonged, like, so, sort of brought you back to what the building was or what it was like in that street.
Hmm.
You said you had a historical photograph.
Yes.
Does that show anything on that wall?
It's empty.
Nothing on it.
The wall's bare.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We were hoping that there was a window or something. We were surprised that there was such a long stretch of wall with nothing on it. To let in some light into that room, but... that wall was bare.
What we could do, this is just a suggestion, is
yes,
we could leave that condition in place, but you can apply at any stage to modify the consent by substituting a different condition after you've talked to the Asheville historical people and come up with some other scheme,
okay,
which would simply mean that the existing public art would be retained until you come up with something else.
Okay.
So that would mean that the condition would stay as it is. You could then consult with the Asheville Historical Society and then come back to modify their consent by changing that condition.
Okay, and that won't mean a new DA?
You don't need a new DA. No,
just modification.
Yeah. Which I think means no new fee.
and time. Our family would love the kitchen upstairs sooner rather than later.
All right.
I guess if we're intending to do that, there is a materials and finishes plan, DA07, which may need to be altered slightly to leave the public art in place, because I note that in these materials and finishes there's wall colours and all sorts of things, so it'd be a bit silly to do the whole wall a colour that doesn't blend with the area around the public art. So yeah, we may also say that the materials and finishes be modified. We'll tweak it so that there's not a mismatch with what you're proposing in your materials and finishes and leaving that series of public art pieces.
Sure. Thank you.
That's it. My only other question was, are you okay with us putting a condition in to create a couple of bike racks in the part of the building where the motorcycle bikes are? We discussed it in a briefing this morning, and if we move those motorcycle parking spaces forward somewhat, there will be space for a couple of wall-mounted bike racks for customers, visitors, etc.
I'm just trying to find it.
Referring to DA plan 06, the ground floor is indicated. That was really, we thought, the only possibility of getting a couple of wall-mounted bike racks. That is a good thing given that the car parking is not compliant currently.
Is that is that under the stairs, sorry?
Not under the stairs. It's south of the loading and access area. There's an area which has been designated motorcycle parking space.
Yeah.
And it's at the behind that, in the same space, but on that wall that runs. Where's that? It's between that and the air conditioning units. There's a wall that runs along. It's part of the car space wall and the motorcycle parking space wall. So we'd effectively bring the motorcycle space forward a little, and then there'd be an area behind that that could accommodate a couple of bikes.
From the car space?
No, no, it's to the left of the car space, at the rear of the motorcycle parking space.
If they're wall mounted, there shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably fit two in, I think.
Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Then you can assume, Mr. Varkas, that you'll get a consent in accordance with the recommended conditions, subject to the addition of those two bike racks.
Mm.
Okay.
Thank you for your time today.
Good. Thank you very much. And we can now move on to the final item, item number 636 Orpington Street, Ashfield, pre-legal. We have no one listed to speak on that matter. Recommendation is for refusal. And I think the panel is of one mind on this to adopt the recommendation. So with that, we can conclude the public meeting and we will have to revert to a private meeting to discuss the outstanding matters. So the public can leave us now.